3 years from now, Atlanta will host the Super Bowl, and one of the main reasons the NFL chose Atlanta is Mercedes-Benz Stadium. That project is the $1.6 billion brainchild of Atlanta Falcons owner Arthur Blank. Mr. Blank joins us now to talk about the new stadium and the Super Bowl, among other things. Good morning.
Good morning, Celeste. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
First, let's talk about the decision where to have Mercedes-Benz Stadium and the neighborhood that surrounds it. I want to play you a clip from one of the previous interviews you'd done. This is from a Falcons community event last year.
It's interesting. These homeowners I've talked to, they all feel like things in this English Avenue area they were working on is getting better, which is encouraging. Over the last 10, 11, 15 years that they've lived here, they're still, though, they talk about certain things which they know they want to see improved. So it's important to acknowledge the things that have gotten better, but it's also important to understand and listen to these folks that are living here about what they tell us. There's a variety of things that we can do to continue to improve.
What kind of mistakes were you trying to avoid when building the stadium?
Well, I think, number one, I think the reason we selected the site that we did is that it's an incredible location that represents the heart and the soul of downtown Atlanta. The problem is, you think of it in terms of the heart, there's a part of it, if you will, to the west of this, if you think of the heart, if you will, that it's not functioning as well as the rest of the heart is, and that's the west side. And so part of our commitment is not only to build the finest sports entertainment venue in the United States, if not the world, which we're in the process of doing, but to make the changes in terms of the west side. And we spent, you know, the better part of 3 years before talking to the folks that are living in those communities. And basically what they told us is that, you know, that what they were looking for is not too unlike almost any American family would say. They want jobs. They want to make sure their kids are going to good public schools. They want to live in safe communities. They want to make sure the communities are healthy and the environment around them is clean and respectable. And so I think that we've dedicated ourselves, along with many partners, to making changes in all of those areas, some of which are easier to do on a short-term basis, and we've had a lot of short-term successes, and we can point to all those. Others take a long-term commitment, and we have the right folks aligned on doing that, both in the nonprofit as well as in the profit world, as well as a political system, I would say, here, a mayor that's committed to the same things that we are. So progress is being made. Tremendous progress is being made in the stadium. It'll be done June of next year, and there's been a lot of progress in these communities. When you spend time walking the streets and talking to these folks, almost on a uniform basis, you hear that things are much better than they used to be. Not as good as you want them to be, but much better than they used to be. And that's the trend line we want to continue.
How do you do that, though? Because there have been complaints when other very expensive stadiums have been built in New York and other cities.
The
prosperity of the stadium doesn't bleed out to the neighborhood that surrounds.
Well, I think you have to, from the very get-go, you know, 7 to 8 years ago when we started on this project, we made it very clear and did it not in a private way, but did it in a public way. We said that we had two goals. One is to build the stadium. We are the finest, you know, facility in the United States today, and there's no question it will be when you open it up. We open it up. I think the world will see that. But two, that an equally important goal to us is to be a catalyst for change in terms of what's happening on the west side. The west side of Atlanta, those communities used to represent close to 65 to 70,000 of population. It's down to 6,500 today. It was the birthplace, and you know, where Martin Luther King was raised, and where Maynard Jackson was raised, where Andy Young was raised, et cetera. And so that's not only important for Atlanta; it's only important for the civil rights movement, but it's important for all of the United States to have those areas really reflect the great traditions that are important there. And so our commitment is to do that over a longer period of time. I mean, those kind of human capital changes don't happen as quickly as building. Whatever building you're building, whatever grant it may be, it's easier to build something than to deal with human capital and societal changes. But we're equally committed and have done that publicly and seeing progress of it.
So how do you respond to the debate now over who should pay for stadiums? This was brought into the headlines this summer by player Richard Sherman, but it's been a debate for a very long time.
It has been.
Yeah, and I want to read this comment from a senior fellow at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research. You probably read his research, Roger Knoll, and he says, NFL stadiums do not generate significant local economic growth, and the incremental tax revenue is not sufficient to cover any significant financial contribution by the city. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think you can point to another group of so-called the experts who would respond differently. But I would say my own viewpoint is that I think it's where you position the stadium. I mean, I think if you put it out in the middle of, I don't want to say nowhere, but in Atlanta, you could, you know, we had opportunities in some counties that really have no connection, if you will, to the heart of Atlanta, to the soul of Atlanta, if you will. I think when you make a commitment to build a stadium that's right in the middle of the population, in this case, close to Centennial Park, close to the West Side, close to the largest aquarium within the United States, the National Human and Civil Rights Museum, the College Hall of Fame, you begin to reach what I call Malcolm Gladwell's version of the tipping point, where the city and the center of the city becomes a place of attraction for guests to come and stay for a period of time. And whether it's the stadium or it's the other attractions or it's the hotels or the restaurants or the communities. And in our case, what we're trying to do beyond the stadium itself, which will host, let's say, 50 great events a year, NFL games, soccer events, concerts and alike, the other 300 days a year or so, we're going to activate all the arcades and plazas around the stadium connected to Centennial Park, which is to the east where the Olympics were, and to the west where the West Side is, and to the Beltline, which surrounds Atlanta, and to Mims Park, which is a old historic park that we're helping restore in the West Side area, and make sure those areas on the other days have the sense of community with theater, with music, with dance, with arts, with a variety of activities, food, to make sure that area becomes a downtown urban park. So whether you live in that area or you come down for the day and spend time in that whole area. So I think it's not just one attraction. It's where, you know, great cities, in my opinion, as I travel the world, and I'm sure you and a lot of our listeners do, travel the world, you see great cities have great parks. Part of what we're trying to develop here is the downtown version of Piedmont Park, which is our version of Central Park here in Atlanta, but a downtown version, an urban version of that. The Congress Center has had great success in doing that with Centennial Park, and we think we can expand that horizontally and connect the West Side and connect those communities and bring that population over to downtown Atlanta as well.
And the stadium will get double duty even just with sports teams. I want to play you this comment from Darren Eels. He's the team president of your new soccer club, Atlanta United, and here's what he had to say.
We've got a chance to rewrite the narrative of Atlanta. I think as we come into 2017, a lot of stories are going to be written about the amazing phenomenon of the city getting behind the team. And I'm hoping that helps to sort of change this. The narrative is incorrect that Atlanta doesn't support its teams. I mean, it's crazy to say that when you look at what we've done here, the Falcons sell out their stadium week after week. So I think there's this lazy journalism almost that Atlanta's not really a sports city, which is not really getting behind the truth.
What do you think? What makes you think that now is a good time for soccer in Atlanta?
Well, let me just respond to the whole Atlanta thing generally. I think that, you know, I would agree with Darren. I hadn't heard that quote, but I would agree with him. And the reason I'd say that, you go back to the years that the Braves, our Atlanta Braves, won 12 divisions in a row. I mean, they were one of the top attendance teams in Major League Baseball. Since I own the team, Atlanta Falcons now, and since 2002, over the 15-year period of time, there have only been two games that have not been sold out. So Atlanta does respond. The Atlanta Hawks, I think, have done much better at the attendance gate than they had in the past as well. So I think, you know, you have to have a winning product on the field. Fans have to feel that ownership will do whatever it takes to win. Fans have to feel that it's going to be a whole game day experience. It's going to be a fan experience, and that you're thinking about them first. So I think we're certainly doing that, and hopefully the other organizations in Atlanta are doing that as well. In terms of soccer, Atlanta's been a huge hotbed for soccer for a long period of time. There are over 55,000 young folks that play soccer in Atlanta. We don't have a head coach. We have seven out of with another 30 players to come, and the players we have are from all over the world. We haven't announced our kit yet, which is our uniform, and yet we have 32,000 founding members have made deposits on season tickets, which is the highest number in the history of Major League Soccer. We've already started our youth academy, which is the five teams that will play Flores Representa starting in September, the first time that's ever been done in the history where the youth academy is playing before the professional team is playing. So all the indications are that we're going to have a great success in Atlanta. And it's a wonderful sport. It's a worldwide sport, obviously. We think it's going to be, it appeals. One of the attractions is that the stadium has been designed to accommodate soccer on a FIFA standard basis. So the seats pull back. The upper bowl can be draped if necessary. All the signing will change completely within the stadium so that when our soccer fans come into the stadium, they will feel like this is a soccer purpose stadium and not something that's just been converted from, you know, from the Atlanta Falcons, if you will.
My guest is Atlanta Falcons owner, Atlanta United owner, Arthur Blank, and we would love to hear from you, whether you're looking forward to the new stadium, maybe just the Super Bowl or a new soccer team. You can tweet us at OST Talk or comment on Facebook. Arthur, we got this comment from Sam Burnham who says, how long before Mercedes-Benz Stadium becomes outdated and has to be replaced? Will it at least be paid for by then? Some skepticism about the funding and the new stadium.
Sure, of course. And that's a very fair question. And I think, you know, it's not the reason that we selected. It's one of the reasons. I shouldn't say it's not the only reason. Mercedes-Benz made a huge financial commitment to support the naming rights in the stadium. But their slogan is the best or nothing. When you watch their ads on TV or see them in the newspaper, that matches our core philosophy of the way that we do things. And so this stadium has been built to last for a very long period of time. We haven't value engineered anything out of the building, zero. We've continued to accept all good ideas. We had some additional time in the front because the land acquisitions took us a little longer than what we had expected initially, a little more complicated. And during that period of time, we continued to develop ideas based on what the fans were telling us. This stadium reflects all of what the fans have been telling us they want to see in a stadium in terms of design, in terms of amenity, in terms of the way it's going to operate, in terms of food pricing, in terms of the LEED certification. It's going to be the first platinum LEED certification building of this type in the United States and probably the only one that will get a platinum certification in the future as well, given the fact those standards just continue to be raised. And we're not at the bar in terms of platinum certification. We are exceeding the bar by a substantial amount. We're going to be the first time in the history of the United States we're going to have the big three, if you will, sporting events lined up year after year, the Super Bowl, the College Final Four, the NCAA Final Four. So, you know, we are building a stadium that will last. It reflects what our fans want. It's going to attract and not only house the Atlanta Falcons and Atlanta United, but national events for a very, very long period of time. It's designed I'll be 74 in September. It's designed to outlive me by a long period of time. Actually, I'm hoping I'm going to live for a long period of time, but it's designed to have an extended life.
Happy early birthday to you.
Thank you very much.
What about the traffic around the stadium? How important was it to you that there be
public transportation
yeah. that brought people to the stadium?
I think that's very important. Again, you know, in great downtowns or great cities, you've got great public transportation. Atlanta's public transportation is not where it needs to be, but it's gotten much, much better. And this particular site's one of the reasons that we selected this site. We probably have approximately a third of our guests, maybe a little less than that, come by public transportation today. And MARTA, which is our public transportation provider, has done an excellent job, and their service record has gotten significantly better over the years to where they get very high grades today. But the stadium itself is serviced by three MARTA stops within 7/10 of a mile. There are two MARTA stops within 1/4 of a mile. There's easy access. There's bridges. There's walking paths from the public transportation to the stadium. So we are thrilled about that. In addition, you know, the advantage we have is that in terms of the NFL games, they're typically played on a Sunday or a Sunday night or a Monday night or a Thursday night when traffic is not an issue. Soccer is normally played on a Thursday night, fairly late. Played on a Saturday, again, when traffic is not an issue. So the majority of our big events, if you will be held when we're not dealing with all the downtown business traffic. The smaller events we will be holding whenever is appropriate.
We have just a couple minutes left, but I wanted to put this question from a listener who asked, Leslie Small asks, will stadium seat owners get first run at buying their seats when big sporting events come to town?
Yeah, our PSLs include the opportunity to participate in almost all of those events. There are some here and there where that will not be the case. And that kind of goes with the nature of the agreement. For instance, the Super Bowl, although we're the host city, the NFL actually takes control of the stadium itself, and we operate it for them, but they actually take control of it. So we don't have any direct say in that. And that's kind of a given. On the other hand, the Super Bowl produces close to $400 million, sometimes even more than that, in terms of the boost to the local economy. And those are the things, and I wouldn't debate with the it's hard to ever debate with a professor from Stanford, but those are the things that begin to take place and happen that are not even in the original design of the stadium. Those things that you can count on, and then there's many events that'll come to pass, and like the Super Bowl, which we didn't know was coming our way in 2019, is coming our way now, and part of it is the location. That was one of the major selling points to the owners. It's the only two secret ballots in the NFL. One is when the commissioner is voted on, the other is the Super Bowl. But we were told, and Noah and I spoke to 31 other owners, that the location of this stadium, the uniqueness of the stadium in downtown Atlanta, the public transportation, the access to all the other venues that are downtown, the ones I mentioned earlier, all those were very important in terms of them making a voting decision.
Arthur Blank is the owner of the Atlanta Falcons. Mercedes-Benz Stadium will host the Super Bowl in 2019. It's such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Take care. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.